Hello, this is Ian with the News Gazette, dated Sunday, May 24th, 2020. We'll start our reading on the front page of the paper. First, we'll go to the Illinois impact for the coronavirus update. 61821 joins 61866 with triple-digit confirmed cases. A second Champaign County zip code now has triple-digit confirmed COVID-19 cases. Eight new cases were added on Saturday, which gave Champaign's 61821 a total of 100 since the start of the coronavirus pandemic, according to CU Public Health District data, which does not distinguish between active and recovered by zip code. Only Rantoul's 61866, which added six cases Saturday for a total of 143, had topped 100 going into the weekend. Overall, Champaign County reported 27 new cases Saturday, for a total of 547. The gap between recovered, 310, and active, 230, continued to widen for the better, while hospitalizations stayed in single digits, 4. Continuing the coronavirus pandemic coverage, by now, every corner of our community has been touched by the coronavirus pandemic, as he will until the crisis subsides, staff writer Anthony Zilis spent a 10th week telling stories of some of those affected. The first story on the front page is The Gold Star Family. As she watched through the tape of the daddy-daughter dance she recorded more than a decade ago, Rebecca Otto wished she could tap her younger self on the shoulder and urge her to back the camera up. She was so focused on capturing her young daughter, Ashley, that she didn't think to get her husband, David, in the shot. "I got his hands and his voice, but I didn't get his face," Rebecca said. "It was just a brief image, so all I could see was his hands and him putting her coat on. You just take for granted the time that you have with the people you love, and you never know when you're never going to have that time anymore." Sometimes Rebecca can hear David's voice in her head, like he's next to her. Ashley, though, has a hard time digging in her memory for the finer details, like the way he sounded and smelled. The last time Ashley saw her dad in person was a few weeks after her 7th birthday in 2009, when the Army major shipped off to Baghdad. Periodically, he'd send home videos recording books to his children, where he'd pause and ask questions as if to wait for their response. David died in October of that year in what was described as a non-combat-related incident. Rebecca describes the next few years as a fog. Ashley, whom Rebecca described as a daddy's girl, who was always with her father, couldn't bring herself to watch those videos or even think of him being gone in the ensuing years. "I was just in denial a lot," Ashley said. "Growing up, I didn't really want anything to do with watching videos of him. I would go outside and see neighbors playing with their kids, and I didn't want anything to do with watching videos of him." Those feelings, though, have evolved over the years. Several years ago, they began traveling to Arlington, Virginia, for the TAPS National Military Survivor Seminar and Family Program, a gathering of 1,500 family members of fallen soldiers. Like her mother and older brother, Austin, Ashley found solace in those events. In her normal world, people who viscerally understood what she was going through were rare, but at TAPS and events like it, she was surrounded by them. This year, her feelings have been especially intense. TAPS will take place, but only virtually because of the pandemic. She graduated last weekend from Oakwood High School, where students came in separately over multiple days to accept their diplomas. Without the graduation ceremony and parties, she made the day special in a different way. Over the years, she wasn't one to visit her father's grave, but last week she put on her cap and gown and went to the cemetery for photos with her father's headstone. "Now that I'm graduating and he's not here, it's a trigger, and it's making everything come back from all of those years. I pushed those emotions down," she said. "It's making all of those emotions surface." Rebecca's memory of her husband is vivid, not only through her memories of him, but also through her children. Over the last few years, she's seen David's grit and determination in Ashley, who took night classes through high school toward the CNA certificate she'll receive this fall. She's set to study nursing in college. The family is hunkered down together as Ashley prepares for a major life transition, and it's a moment when they remember acutely how much they miss David. As her daughter graduated, Rebecca wanted to make sure Ashley remembered in a literal way how much her father cared about her. That's why she took boxes of old family tapes, including the one he sent from deployment, and had them digitized. Ashley's emotions poured out as she watched her father tell her and her brother how much he loved them. "For her, I think it was just kind of surreal," Rebecca said. "He's not a figment of her imagination. He really was real. There are these milestones where I wish he was here, so he could see what these kids have become, what they're doing with their lives. I can see the look on his face. Any parent would want to be there for their kids during their milestones, and he would be proud." The next story about those affected by coronavirus is the ESL teachers. In the weeks after the schools closed, Unit 4 English as a Second Language instructor, Coach Kiri Sowers, could hear the concern in teachers' voices when they had conversations. Some of the students' families had arrived recently from other countries, and they were thrown into school in a new world without being able to understand the language their teachers and peers were speaking. Now, those students were back at home, where they were expected to navigate this new world remotely, along with their parents, without the structure of a school day. "Our teachers' hearts are worried for our kids," said Sowers. "We're worried that our most vulnerable kids are safe and they have what they need. We've also been taking care of our own families at home." ESL teachers can be a life raft for those families and kids who are taking on what Sowers called a double cognitive load of learning normal coursework while learning a new language. At a time when teachers and students are in danger of becoming disconnected without strong ties between parents and schools, simply making contact with those families is crucial. "Our families who were new arrivals are in trauma for 5 years and are trying to figure out job security. They're working at night. Mom and dad take different shifts so they can take care of different kids at different times of the day," Sowers said. "Parents are exhausted and have really high stakes. The whole experience puts lots of stress on families, and school has kind of been a respite for families who are going through this experience of being new, and now they don't have that." As ESL teachers are pulling together to help families already navigating a completely new situation, Sowers was one of this year's two CU Schools Foundation Shining Star Award winners. When she found out teachers nominated her and flipped through their letters of support, she teared up. "It's really been a highlight of my career because this is from my peers," she said. "I am a teacher and I have the heart of a teacher, so for them to honor me, it's just overwhelming and wonderful, and a memory I will cherish for a long time." Sowers is mulling over the ways she'll spend the $500 grant the award winners receive, and she's considering holding an international art and music festival for Unit 4's multilingual families at a time when festivals are able to be held. But for now, simply maintaining a connection with families who need their help, however they need it, is the most important part of her job. "I think it's important just to keep reaching out, keep calling them, and stay connected," Sowers said. "We've had a lot of really beautiful successes with families sending videos to teachers, thanking them for connecting them with food, and really basic things that they're thinking about even more than schooling." Next story is the artists. For the last 30 years, Jill Miller spent her spring applying to art shows across the Midwest, where she'd spend summer weekends selling her batik artwork. It was a constant cycle. She'd craft shirts and other apparel with wax drawings and dip them in dye to make a colorful design. Then, she'd head to a show to sell them to the crowds of people milling about. As her primary source of income evaporated over the last few months, she began thinking about all the other artists and businesses no longer able to generate their normal incomes. "I was worried about myself and everyone I know," she said, "because there are so many small local businesses that are all in trouble." A few weeks ago, she began formulating an idea to help small businesses and struggling artists like herself. After noticing Art Co-op had shifted its store online quickly when closures began, she proposed an idea to team up, to which they quickly agreed. They'd offer a batik t-shirt with Art Co-op's logo that Miller made, along with a $10 gift card for $50. I thought there were enough artists, enough small businesses that are kind of stunned and struggling, she said. I didn't realize it at the time, but after some conversations, I had friends say, I don't know what to do. I don't know who to talk to. Miller put out the word to other artists about her template for teaming up with businesses, a program that is now called CU Partnership, emphasis on the art. The only rules were that the artwork was to be exclusive to that particular store and limited edition. They could contact a local business, make what they wanted, and work out pricing themselves. The next artist to team up with the business was E.K. Anna Henequit, known as Ika, who partnered with Jane Addams Bookshop. Ika, whose drawings of animals partaking in human activities have plastered billboards and buses around the town for the last few years, painted drawings of animals milling about the shelves of books. The 25 available bundles sold out within days. So Lydia Pudicombe's print of her ink drawing of her dog riding a bicycle that she made in conjunction with Itty Bitty Bike Shop. Miller's t-shirts eventually sold out too. Paintings, hair picks, bags, photography prints, and necklaces went up for sale. Once again, the artistic community had outlets to sell their work, and customers were buying. It's heartening to know there is support, Miller said. Miller is uncertain what will become of art shows in the long term, so she plans to build up her Etsy store in the coming months to make up for the lost income. That doesn't mean she's done collaborating with small businesses. She's working on a project with a goat farm in Pecatonica and teamed up with the Wheelhouse and Itty Bitty Bike Shop in St. Joseph. The way things are going, we still need it, Miller said. We still need to support each other. This is part of our future. We need to boost the little people up. The next story is The Barbers. When Osh Knox sees another person, whether they're on TV or standing in front of him, he immediately looks at the top of their head. The first thing I notice about every individual is their hair, he said. The longtime barber at Rose and Taylor looks at heads as a canvas. And lately, he's noticed that a lot of canvases are in need of painting. 2+ months have passed since barbers were last allowed to open in Illinois. Many of Knox's clients come in weekly, meaning they've missed about 9 haircuts. This Friday, they'll likely be able to sit back in the barber's chair, with Illinois set to move on to Phase 3 of the state's reopening plan. While Rose and Taylor won't be able to be the social hub it normally is, Knox is ready to get back to work. It gives us an opportunity to be creative and just get back to the flow of things and just have camaraderie in the barbershop, even though there are some stringent measures, Knox said. The barbershop itself won't look like what we're accustomed to. It's been that meeting ground, and we communicate about all different subject matters. But in terms of the hair, I think we're all looking forward to getting back to it and being creative. We may have to cut some long hair. We may have to cut some botched up jobs. But it all comes with the trade, and we're all excited and ready to get those creative juices flowing. Along with some of his colleagues, Knox has worked to make sure that the shop is as safe as possible when it opens. He took 2 certification courses through Barbicide, a line of disinfectant for barbers, including one specific to COVID-19. Inspired by the system at Schnucks, he set up a separate entrance and exit so that people aren't going through the same door at once. Haircuts will be by appointment only, and instead of waiting in the shop, customers will stay in their cars and receive a call when the chair is ready. Those appointments are spaced an hour apart, so they have plenty of time to disinfect. Barbers also have extra disposable masks, just in case a customer doesn't bring one. Like Knox, Carlos Williams views himself as more than a barber, both in the shop and outside, where he's part of a mentoring group. He's still met with kids he worked with over Zoom, but it'll be different seeing them in person in the shop. It'll be more one-on-one time because we won't be able to hang out in the barbershop like we used to with so many people, Williams said. It'll be more personal. It'll be good. During the closure, Knox has worked on expanding his brand of clothing and moisturizer called Beard Culture. One of the shirts that he designed before the shop closed, Imagine a World Without Barbers. For the last few months, the world has seen exactly that. Knox is looking forward to forgetting what the world was like, even if an afternoon at the barbershop won't be like it once was for the foreseeable future. "To be honest, it may be something that we have to get used to," he said. "It may get to the point when we can have 10 people in there all the time. But right now, we want to be ultra super cautious. We've learned that as time has gone on, this pandemic affects all ages. We just want to be mindful of that. Although we'll miss those things, everybody's health is the most important thing. When time passes, if everything gets back to what we hope it is, we can potentially get back to what we're accustomed to. But like I said, who knows? It could be the new normal." The next story is the Champaign Park District. Allison Williams has been stuck in her one-bedroom apartment for 7 weeks, tied to her computer, as she sketches out plans for parks and trails and writes grant applications as the Champaign Public Park District's planning coordinator. So when the Park District's Horticulture Department put out a call for employees to help plant flowers in front of businesses for its Flower Island program, she jumped at the chance to get outside. "It's definitely nice to get out," Williams said. "I live in a one-bedroom apartment, so after 7 weeks in there, I was looking for a way to get out and help out, while still trying to stay safe. It's definitely nice to get outside and do something more active than sit at a computer." The Park District has been profoundly impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic, with programming canceled and buildings and fields closed. The Horticulture Department normally has a large staff of part-time workers, but most of those positions have been cut. Some people normally occupying offices are now outside with their hands in the soil. While opening a swimming pool or putting on a sports league simply isn't in the cards this summer, beautifying the city is still possible, and the Flower Island program was already paid for by the businesses it serves. "It's one of the most popular programs we have," Williams said. "People seem to really like them. They're kind of one of those things that are unique to Champaign, and we're providing a service for a lot of businesses that want to make the community more attractive or brighten things up over the summer. There's always been a lot of support for the program." Williams will eventually go back to working from her apartment or the office, leaving a hole to fill as the Park District tries to maintain the flowers planted around town. She'll go back to mapping out the future of parks in Champaign. But she is confident that the flowers will still be blooming this summer, even if most of Champaign is closed. "We have a lot of full-time staff who, even if things are canceled for the time being, people have been really innovative about how to reach the community," Williams said. "They're definitely willing to fill in the gaps. It'll just be a matter of who to use where so we can help everyone to have some sort of Park District experience." And the next story is the nonprofit. When Nathan Montgomery purchased 5 pallets of toilet paper months ago, the executive director of Salt and Light thought the ministry's grocery store would hold a sale to get customers to the door. As it turned out, the toilet paper didn't have to go on sale, and a simple household product became a lifeline. "That happened to come in right before things started happening, and people started running out of it," Montgomery said. "Once word got out that we had it, of course we saw a lot of traffic." In a crazy time for grocery stores, Salt and Light is in a unique position. The organization started out as a food pantry, among other services it offered. But 5 years ago, it switched to what Montgomery calls a social enterprise model. Instead of giving out food for free, people volunteer at the store and earned money towards groceries, money that caps out at $165 per month. Around 250 households participate in the program. The store is open to the general public as a normal grocery store, which Montgomery compared to Aldi or Save-A-Lot. According to Montgomery, there is no precedent for this kind of enterprise, which has caused confusion with customers over the last 5 years. "It's like going to any other store," Montgomery said. "But because we were so well known as a pantry, and there's no frame of reference for the kind of thing we're doing, we are constantly running into folks who have no idea they can shop there, or how shopping there helps the work that we're doing." Like most organizations, things have changed for Salt and Light during the COVID-19 pandemic. The organization closed its Champaign branch in mid-March, moving most full and part-time employees to the Urbana branch. Volunteering to earn store credit has been put on hold. Instead, Montgomery said staff went through its lists of families who utilized the store most and gave them store credit. Running a charity as a business, though, has its difficulties when an economic crisis hits. Sales in its thrift store, which is run off donations, were down significantly. While grocery sales increased, they didn't offset the thrift donations because the store purchases its groceries from normal suppliers. Luckily, Salt and Light received loans from the Payroll Protection Program and was able to hire back employees it laid off. Charitable donations have also helped. Some churches and other organizations have simply donated directly to Salt and Light to give to people in need, while others have purchased gift cards to hand over to people directly. The United Way, for instance, gave $15,000 to split among two organizations that help refugee and immigrant families. Those organizations set up accounts with Salt and Light for families in need. They're helping those families, but they're helping out us as well, Montgomery said. The last 2 months have involved ever-changing guidelines from the CDC and the Public Health Department, and Salt and Light has struggled to keep up. When you think about things like plexiglass for the checkout lanes and PPE, as a small organization, it's hard for us to get that, even when every company in America is buying all of that, Montgomery said. It took us 2 weeks just to get the plexiglass in order to build our checkout lanes. We are hopefully just now going to get a stand for our hand sanitizer, because we couldn't get it anywhere. Salt and Light is also looking to provide an online shopping option, a complicated endeavor that has become increasingly necessary. They hope to announce that in July. The change that might be the most profound to Salt and Light's mission, though, doesn't have anything to do directly with sales numbers. It really hasn't diminished the workload, but it has been an adjustment not having our volunteers and our participants in the stores, and just not having those relationships, Montgomery said. We're a very relationally focused organization, so this has obviously made that very difficult, if not impossible. And the next story is the Literacy Interventionalist. As her students at Leal Elementary School acclimated to remote learning, Literacy Interventionalist Darcy Silver didn't want to be a burden on families, but she wanted them to know she was there for them. So instead of assigning work or giving lessons, she set up video chats and simply let the students read a book to her. I didn't want to be an extra thing to do, but I wanted them to know I was there to help them, said Silver, who teaches students in kindergarten through second grade. So at the beginning, I started talking with families. We would FaceTime and children would read a book to me, just to try to keep the lines of communication open. Those meetings, though, developed into something more. She began sharing with them the books and resources they use at school that they were familiar and comfortable with. And eventually, Silver set up 8 regular tutoring sessions with those kids. All the while, the kids weren't the only ones learning. The parents were soaking up knowledge as well. What's wonderful is the relationships you build with families, because you have mom or dad sitting right there next to them, so that strengthens what they're able to do with at home. There have been some positive aspects in this crazy time. I just feel like it's helped them realize how their child reacts to different print or what words they might struggle on, or if there's a letter that tripped them up. It also shows that the child that we're in this together. Silver was awarded one of the 2 Shining Star Awards from the CU Schools Foundation, which comes with a $500 grant. She said she'll wait and see how the next few months pan out before she spends the money, either to replace items she'd loaned out to families, or, if the closure goes into the fall, to purchase resources to give directly to them. When they do come back to school, Silver knows things won't be the same right away, particularly for her youngest students. So, again, she will make sure she doesn't burden students as they react to a new situation, instead easing them into an environment where they will learn and grow. I think when they come back, she said, we're going to have to focus on their well-being and make sure that they're in that frame of mind to know they're in a safe place and that we are there for them. And the final story of this section is the high school choir. As she communicated with them from home early in the shutdown, Becky Park wasn't seeing the enthusiasm out of her Urbana High School choir students that she normally does. Teaching choir, she realized, simply isn't the same when students are siloed. many of her students love choir because of the shared interest and camaraderie with their fellow singers. I was just saying, here's your assignment. Here's what you're going to do. We wouldn't have Zoom meetings to discuss it, but there wasn't really room to offer any suggestions because it was so straightforward. Then, discussions began about how to make Urbana's online graduation ceremony as close to a normal graduation ceremony as possible, which meant that Park's choir would put together a musical performance. Each year, the song the choir sings just before graduation is a collaborative process. The students help pick the music and the arrangement. With their students yearning for interaction, Park saw them fully engaged. They decided to sing a mashup of four songs, one of which the choir sang at graduation when these seniors were freshmen. A synthesizer track would be put together by choir member Moses Sedubio, and singers would jump in playing instruments and singing solos. Finally, choir was back to being an interactive activity rather than a solo one. They're able to see their own suggestions come to life, so they're more invested and more excited about it, Park said. I think just being able to work with them together to come up with something that they're excited about and can get behind has been a difference and a game changer compared to what I was doing before, which was just do this and have it done by this time. Graduation will be far from normal for the Urbana seniors, along with kids across the country. It'll consist of coming into the school over several days, walking across the stage individually on camera. But Park and her choir were determined to make Saturday's ceremony special and authentic. I think the pandemic has uprooted a lot of things in our day-to-day life, Park said, especially for seniors who have so many last things taken away from them that they should have been able to do, like senior prom or graduation or senior trips. So obviously, seniors are really upset, but so are their families and the community in general. They were saying, we want to see our kids sing at graduation. A little bit of time we have left in this reading, let's go by the top of the morning section. Since their indoor tennis season was cut short, the 36 members of the Illini International Tennis Club were reimbursed for a portion of their fees by the Champaign Park District. But instead of pocketing what turned out to be about $1,700, the group went a different route. We knew there were others who needed the money more than we did, Urbana's Tanya Deckett said. This week, members Ian Wang and Jim Koontz delivered a giant check for $3,284 to the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, which is pictured above in this article. It was a welcome boost for a nonprofit that is needed now more than ever. The tennis club, founded by U of I grad students about 15 years ago, plays three times a week. It's a competitive, talented bunch that is itching to return to the court. When the season was canceled, Koontz emailed the group about the refund and the idea of putting it to good use. It was their money, he said, but not a single person asked for any money back. Many even gave more. Thus, $1,700 grew to $3,284. I was so proud, Koontz said. We thought that money was needed by other people, so that's what we did. And with that, that's about all the time we have for part one of today's reading of the News Gazette, dated Sunday, May 24th, 2020. This has been Ian. Stay tuned in just a few minutes for part two of today's reading.